May it please the court, we're back to a sex offender present in a public park. Same issues we've been discussing this afternoon. If there's anything the court wishes to inquire of, I'll be happy to answer. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Mr. Price.
Questions? Thank you.
May it please the court.
Certainly.
I'd like to begin by addressing some of the very direct questions that were asked to other lawyers. I hope that I give direct answers. Yes, this is a criminal case. The state wants to send my client to prison for conduct that was not illegal at the time that he knowingly waived his rights to enter a plea of guilty to a sex offense. Much like other counsel that's appeared here today, I'm not primarily an appellate counsel, although this is not my first trip to this august court. I'm primarily a trial lawyer. Since 2009, when this statute was enacted, that people with a qualifying sex offense could not be knowingly on a park or within 500 feet loiter by a park that had this equipment, I have on more than 20 occasions counseled with people that were charged with qualifying sex offenses. In every one of those, we had the opportunity to talk about all of the things that they would have to look forward to. Not only did we have to cover all of their rights that they would be giving up because they would be a felon, we had to cover all of the things that they also were taking on and the additional burdens because they were being convicted of a qualifying felony, which would change their status. And the things that they are talked, there is something surreal about sitting in a room with your client who's looking at a potential life sentence, and you have to tell them, you have to put a sign in your yard on Halloween. You have to stay in your house on Halloween. But that's something that we're required to do because the law evolves. Things are different now than they were in 1875. And this law is probably a really good idea, and it might protect our children. But when this law was enacted, it was enacted to go forward. And these are the things that we do counsel our clients about. In fact, recently, in a case that was prosecuted by the Attorney General's office, during the plea colloquy, the trial judge asked my client, "Do you understand that after you do your 16 years in prison, you're going to have to register? Do you understand? You may be subject to lifetime supervision. Do you understand about schools and daycares and working in the medical service industry, not ever being able to work in a nursing home, about all of the Halloween restrictions, about public park restrictions?" Those were done during the colloquy of a plea of guilty when my client was receiving a negotiated settlement of 16 years in prison. Mr. Carey pled guilty in 1989. It was impossible for him to knowingly give up all of those rights and agree to all of these additional obligations put on him because they weren't obligations at the time. And that's exactly what retrospective application of criminal offenses is all about.
Was there a difference between putting in affirmative obligations versus, you're saying, giving up rights, but you don't have a vested right to necessarily, or unless your argument is a fundamental right, to go in a park or to teach in a school or to do certain things. So the fact that he wasn't prohibited from doing those things doesn't mean he had a right to assume the law would never change, does it?
Well, I would agree with that, Your Honor. The overriding sentiment, not only among the five individuals at bar today, but other individuals, is, had I known that would be the case, I would have taken my chances and gone to trial. It wasn't that long ago we were representing people that pled guilty to sex offenses, only to be told later they were going to have to register as a sex offender for the rest of their life. It does place an additional obligation on them.
So is there any limit? If some of the other counsel in your position have argued there is no limit, that because any impairment of their right would fall under a retrospective application. So that
know their the status as a convicted sex offender could never be utilized to impose any kind of restriction. Is that your position as well?
Not at all. This is not about restrictions. This is about being prosecuted for criminal offenses.
And so where is that line? How do we make sense of what is a retrospective prohibition and there can be no restriction?
Your Honor, I really don't know where we draw that line. And in fact, that's not the question that's really before us today, but it's an important question. And I understand it's a thorny one that this court's going to have to deal with. But the other thorny question, the other side of the equation is, at what point is it just silly to change the law based upon someone's status of a conviction where perhaps it really may not make any difference, but criminal penalties could be imposed. For instance, there was a question about teachers. There is a certification process, and this isn't about that. This is about whether or not a person could be prosecuted for being a teacher because the rules changed. It's not about whether or not a school district would be required to remove them from service, and quite frankly, I think if that was the law, there would be an affirmative duty on the school district to do so. This isn't just about what you can and can't do in a regulatory fashion. It's about what kind of criminal penalties are imposed. And to get back to a very pointed question that was raised in someone else's argument, there's three reasons that Bethorum really shouldn't apply. The Bethorum really should be ignored in this analysis. The first one is this, that in the last 100 years, there have been numerous cases, regardless of whether it was briefed or raised, there have been numerous cases decided by this court where the issue is never really talked about, is this only good for civil cases, regulatory cases, criminal cases? It is assumed as law that retrospective application of criminal cases is something that can be reviewed. That's the most important.
And what are those cases over the last 100 years?
You're saying if everybody knew it only applied to civil, somebody would have said that, or they would have said that in FR or RL or the others, that can't
Absolutely.
Be a technical meeting because nobody thought of it until all these recent cases.
That's correct. You know, we've got FR versus St. Charles County Sheriff's Department. We have state XREL Dalton versus Deering. We have the Independence National Education Association versus Independence School District. Kring versus Missouri. State versus Kyle. That's from 1901. We have the Melvin Ray Davis case out of my county.
Now, the Kyle was an ex prospecto case, so for the right.
Absolutely.
And it was an ex prospecto.
Absolutely. But it has, the analysis was not truly in an ex post facto fashion, although it was the terminology that was used. And the argument here seems to have shifted into one of nomenclature as opposed to one of notice. The second reason is that, much like the point that was made in the last argument, essentially, after they went on, and I reread my copy of Bethorum over the lunch hour, after they went through this detailed analysis of what is and what is not ex post facto, what is and what is not retrospective, they still granted relief. I think that it perhaps might be a different argument today if Bethorum had said, if the court in Bethorum had said, look, this is just for a civil remedy, forget it, you're stuck with the 8 years. And they didn't do that. Essentially, the ruling, they didn't give him the relief he requested. The relief he requested was, I want to be discharged. But they said, you're right. They changed the rules, and they went from 7 years, and you got 8, and we're going to give you 7. And the third reason is because this is not a criminal case. The analysis that they went into was to talk about retrospective applicability of a civil case, and it is a civil case. So I'm not sure that Bethorum really belongs in this case, but if it does, it's an issue of nomenclature.
Counsel, I'm sorry, I just didn't hear you. You're saying Bethorum was a civil case, this is a criminal case, so it doesn't apply?
I don't think it's the overriding law that applies to this. Instead, I think that we look at the long line of cases that this court has decided, even as recently as Melvin Ray Davis and FR versus St. Charles County, and we see that, in fact, this type of notice analysis is exactly what's called for in criminal cases.
And then I think we interrupted you and you skipped from one to three. What was the second?
Oh, Judge, I maybe only had two good ideas, but it always sounds better when you say for three reasons.
I think your number one was no prior cases raised this, so it couldn't be the meaning. Number two was notice, and you said number three was one was a criminal case and one was a civil case.
Thank you.
It's all right.
That's all right. You're taking real notes, and I'm just kind of keeping mental score. I don't want to beat a dead horse about...
What about your argument when you deal with the text?
Sir?
As I recall, it was your brief that argued the union case. In other words, we don't go past the words.
That was brought up in my brief, Your Honor. Yeah. I wasn't the only brief that brought that up, but it was brought up in my brief. But that's true. I think that we need to look at what the usual, common, understood definition of all of these things is. And we don't go beyond the words. And if that, in fact, ends up torpedoing my client's position, so be it. My client's position is that, yes, he was in a park, and he was parked next to the playground equipment. However, and we did not have an evidentiary hearing. It was a legal hearing. But at the preliminary hearing, this was proffered at our hearing on the motion. It is part of the record. At the preliminary hearing, the evidence was clear that the park ranger saw exactly two human beings in the park on this rainy day in July of 2012. My client and his wife. Even though he was parked next to the playground equipment, our argument is that shouldn't matter. We're not in a situation where we're just driving through the road. We're not in a situation where we're fishing miles away. My client parked next to the playground equipment because that's where the parking lot is. His point is, this was not his deal. This was not what he bargained for when he voluntarily became a sex offender when he pled guilty in 1987. And it should not be held against him criminally, and he shouldn't go to prison for something where the rules got changed. We think it's a great idea going forward. We think anyone convicted of a sex offense after the application of the statute in 2009 needs to be advised about it. And they need to be held accountable about it. And I see the slippery slope. I see the other side of the slope. If we're really at the peak, I understand where the concern of some court is, look, where do we draw the line? Well, the issue is, where do we draw the line on the other side? And Mr. Carey's position is that great deference should be given to the trial court who dismissed this case, and his rationale and the wisdom of his ruling was not challenged. What was challenged was the nomenclature as to whether or not retrospective application applies to Mr. Carey's case or it only applies to civil rights and civil issues. If there are no other questions, I'll rest on my argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Let me take the converse of one of the statements that was made is, if Bethurum was obviously wrongly decided, why was there no outcry raised against it? Why was nobody coming along in this 100 or so more years after that to challenge that and say that's wrong? So
well,
the
idea. I have no idea why, except that no other case apparently came up that dealt with that issue. So I'm unclear in what form we would know whether or not anybody agreed or disagreed until a case.
Somebody brings up a case that says this criminal law is retrospective, and Bethurum's wrong, and it should be found retrospective.
But can you answer the question made by opposing counsel?
Sure.
That if it was so clear it only applied to civil cases and not criminal, why was that not argued in any in Doe, in FR, in RL, in any other case? it didn't appear to have that technical meaning today. Where did that change?
I don't think it changed. I think it's just a failure to go back far enough and look.
No, but that's not my question. What did Bethlehem say? The question is, if it has a well-settled and understood meaning that it only applies in civil cases, you couldn't tell that from the cases?
At the time of the adoption of the Constitution.
I'm talking about now. Does it have a settled meaning? I mean, FR, RL, Bethlehem, or any of the other recent cases never said it applies retrospectively only to civil cases. So doesn't that contradict your argument that this is from the time of Bethlehem and before that on up to today? It's had the settled meaning of only civil, but none of the attorneys on either side in any of those cases even thought of that.
Possibly because it was so well settled, it just never came up again, that the retrospective was always based on civil challenges.
So that would be ex post facto if you tried to apply that to civil. It would be so well settled, no one... I mean, that... Is there not a stronger argument than it was so well known that nobody thought to argue it?
I think that's it. Well, not argue it most recently, but I'm not sure I would rely on a handful of cases from only 2009 onwards to say that that's clear evidence that the meanings changed when the issue just wasn't brought up.
What about other states that have a retrospective clause in their constitution, the four or six other states? How do they apply it? Do they apply it just in the civil context, or do they apply it to criminal cases?
Some of them do. And in some cases, I think the language has changed. I think Texas actually has replaced retrospective with retroactive. I seem to recall the issue came up in the reply brief in Melvin Davis, and I seem to recall there were two states that limited to civil. I'm thinking off the top of my head, Colorado and Georgia. But again, that's off the top of my head.
And what about the other states?
Well, New Hampshire's provision has stayed the same. I don't, and of course, I don't think there have been any recent cases that have revisited the issue or have changed the original understanding that was cited in the Rich and the Wart cases that predate Bethlehem. So, of course, you have to look at every state constitution, see what their specific wording is to see how they go about that. And I see my time's up, so unless there are any other questions, thank you.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.